So welcome for everybody. And first, I'm going to give you a brief overview of what we plan to do here, okay? And just to give you what the plan is. The plan is, first of all, is like this. We are going to focus on something which is the concept of machshava, the concept of Jewish thought, but as it pertains more on the mystical side. Now, all ideas are based, we know that the mystical ideas within the Jewish community was something that was kept in secret. There were secret schools, but throughout the times it became more and more revealed because the tradition was to reveal as the world needs more, as the world becomes more prepared for it. And the tradition leaders brought these ideas forward and they thought that the idea should be revealed. But, so, we all know that one of the basic focus of the mystical ideas is the Zoharic tradition, the tradition of the Zohar, as it was interpreted by the Arizal in the 16th century. But we are not going to go through those primary sources. We are going to go to something which is called the mediated ideas, the people, the Jewish thinkers, which used these mystical ideas and brought it into terms that we can understand it. And this is a traditional school, and it's amazing because it spans from the Litvische world, from the world which is the non-Hasidic world, to the Hasidic world. And that predates them. And there are a few people who are part of that same conversation. And there are always differences between them, but all of them espouse the same idea. And I learned by Moshe Shapiro. And the idea was, his approach was always to take the same approach that we take to Jewish learning. The same way how you learn a regular page of Gemara. To apply to the same topics in the same approach. In a logical, understanding, clear way. So we're going to use those thinkers throughout the generations who participate in that school. Again, consciously or subconsciously. It doesn't mean that there was a school that is subscribed and said, okay, we're going to thematically have this approach. But these are people who have a common language. And who are the people? Starting the Maral in the 16th century was like this. The Shloh was part of that same conversation. This went into the Megale Mukot, which we are learning on Shabbat, the same conversation. Then it went into the schools of the Ramchal, right, the Moshe Chaim Lutzato. It went to the school of the Gra and the Talmidei Baal Shem. One of them that we're going to use extensively is Rav Tzadok HaKohen. Rav Tzadok HaKohen is somebody amazing because he is what's called a transitional figure. He was somebody who was in the Lita school, which is the same school of the Gro, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, which is the traditional Litvish school. And then he decided to transition to the Hasidic school. And he became himself a Hasidic rabbi. So his books, you could see the transition. There is a lot of scholarly work to show what books are from this era, what books are from that era. But the amazing part of it is that all of it is the same conversation. So you could have both tastes. Okay? So we're going to do that. Now, my approach, I'm a firm believer of something called consilience. And consilience is the idea of combining ideas together to see how things work together. Not only things are consistent, but how ideas actually inform each other. And this is traditional learning of halakha. This machshava, which is the mystical ideas behind, but also the historical sense, right? I have a PhD. That's my, I teach at the University of Pennsylvania. So I do sponsor the idea of doing this also in an academic sense. And I'm a believer that not only things are consistent, but things are actually consilient. That you see how one thing helps the other. And I'm sorry. So how one thing helps the other. How different disciplines actually talk to each other. And by understanding better history, you understand better Machshava. And by understanding Machshava better, you understand Halakha better. We'll give you. And also, in an additional sense, an additional perspective, the concept of comparative religion. I have a PhD in comparative religion. So it's impossible to talk about the Avot and the genesis of Jewish people without talking at the genesis of the Abrahamic religions, which is Christianity and Islam. Now, we have, our community has the idea of like trying to tell Islam what they are. And that doesn't really work. So I think we have to see, and I'll try to bring to you things, Islam in their own words, the Quran, and that's in their own words, and to see how these ideas that we espouse in our own understanding of how the world is, in mystical terms, is extremely consistent and consilient to how they themselves see the story. In other words, you're seeing from somebody who's not sharing the same tradition, and you see how they view things, how they rewrite things. Because as we know, Christianity and Islam are something called replacement theologies. Those are theologies who consciously are coming to replace the Old Testament. So they are not just out there religions who have nothing to do with us. They are actually forms of replacement theologies. And we're going to see how they see and how this is consistent and conciliatory to how we believe the world works. So in other words, those are not exceptions to the rule. It's part of the Jewish plan and it's part of God's history. And that's part of the course. So what we're going to be learning, we're going to learn the concept in the mystical terms of the Avot, the genesis of the Jewish people, up to Matan Torah, and also to how I understand, and I'll bring you sources of how our tradition and our Mesorah is. Because it's also something which is suddenly so perhaps misunderstood or used and misused or perhaps abused the Mesorah. What is our Mesorah? Now, to avoid, but now the approach will be textual. Okay, we are going to learn texts, primary texts of thinkers inside. And I will explain to you. So this is not going to be a shiur that I'm going to teach you, because I think that shiur has a validity, but that's not what I try to. I think there is ways today of learning which are better. And one of them is textual. You have the text, we need to learn the text together, texts which I think are important and relevant to that conversation. And this way will allow you, number one, to, I will explain to you how I see it, but when you review it, you might have a different approach, and I'd love to see it. Because the beauty of the Jewish texts, they're open for interpretation. They're not didactic. Meaning the beauty of the Jewish text is, like Gadamer always says, it's a horizon encounter between the author and between the reader. And that's what I want to show you, how this is a horizon encounter. Jewish texts, it's interesting that we always mention, Sefer Yetzirah writes, the book, the world was created with a book, and a story. This is the kernel of the world. So the Gra explains, because the world is a book. But there is a book which is the author's book, what he meant when he wrote. And there is the book as the reader reads the book. It's an encounter of two books. And the story, it's weaving these two books together. And that's the world. The world is a book that God wrote. And we are here to read and interpret. And the story of the world allows us to merge the horizons. Very much like Hans Gadamer in the theories of writing, which I'm a big sponsor of it, because I think that that's Jewish learning. That is always an encounter between the text and the reader. And for us to say that this is what the author meant, I don't think we, at least I, don't ever attempt to find out what the author really wrote, because to know that, it's almost an impossibility. Right? So it's not originalism. Then Scalia, I'm not sure how much you would see an approach, but that's a separate issue, right? And that's a separate thing that you go. And the question is, Jewish texts, I think Scalia would agree, that they were written in such a way that is ambiguous enough, that there is leeway enough, that the reader is part of that conversation. That's why when you see a Gemara, it's a Beis Medrash in function. You're not watching somebody else learning. You're part of that conversation throughout the generations. So we learn today a Gemara. So this, to give you a taste of Gadamer's encounter of horizons, this is the attempt of this class. So what we're going to do is study about the formation in mystical terms of Jewish people and how do we encounter in that conversation in comparative terms to other religions that directly came from us. Indirectly, we might touch the other faiths that don't consciously touch us, but that we believe that they do, that there is some kind of a convergence, but they don't consciously say that. And we're going to touch the kid, we'll just do it. Do. And we are going to do it in a form of textual based for you to have a text and encourage everybody to review the text and to experience the merging of horizons between the readers and the text and to show you the richness of Jewish texts of how you could apply this to your own learning. Okay? So we'll start tonight. We have a handout. And the idea will start with the Derech Hashem. Derech Hashem is the work of the Ramchal. The Ramchal is Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, who lived a very short life in the 17th century. He was a great Jewish thinker. He was in itself revolutionary, meaning when he came out, his ideas were extremely controversial. Most important, not his ideas, but his method and the way how he was revealed things were extremely controversial. And he's somebody who also went into a transition. As we know, the Ramchal had, in essence, two lives. He had his life in Padua, which he wrote all his books, which are very Kabbalistic in nature. And those Kabbalistic in nature, he was an amazing person. I just like tell you that at the age of 17, his first book was a book on Latin poetry. Okay? His name is called Lashon Limudim, and I'll be happy to bring you for next class for you to see the original print. That's his first one that he published. And this is when he went and he wrote Kabbalah. He wrote the continuation of the Zohar. The Zohar had Tikkuni Zohar. He continued writing it. He became like the continuation extension of Shmuel Yochai. He continues writing the Zohar and he gets into this huge controversy. And he actually was an amazing, sensitive person. He wrote actually poetry, I told you, but he wrote a play. So he wrote a play, and his play on his first time when he was in Padua is called Migdal Oz. And that Migdal Oz became a play, and it's an amazing play about his life. And what happened was, at that time, they went, and it was a storm in the Jewish people, and he was forced to basically burn everything he wrote. Everything he wrote was supposed to be burned. His rabbi was one of the great Kabbalists, decided not to burn and instead to bury his writings. And yet he was expelled out of Italy. He goes to Amsterdam and he becomes a diamond cutter. And he becomes also a teacher of children in the yeshiva called Etz Chaim. And he writes his second version. He becomes a new person, very less Kabbalistic. He writes the Misilat Yesharim, the Derech Hashem, all of these books that we're going to read, they became very useful. He writes, but the Gra always said, his first Kabbalistic ideas are all buried in his second life, but in a language that we can relate to. He says, if you look at the Misilat Yesharim, the first 11 chapters, says the Gra, there is not one extra letter that's not based in Kabbalistic teachings. And it sounds something very, very simple. I always tell my children, if you have to ever go into an island and you be alone, what book should you take? Let's say if they allow you to take one book. My personal view, take the Misilat Yesharim. Because Misilat Yesharim teaches you how to be a good Jew. And it's very simple and you could give your children. And it's something very open to any age. But interestingly enough, it's all the Kabbalistic ideas are buried. And he actually wrote a second play. And the second play that he wrote, which is on his second life, is called Lesharim Tehila. He wrote this as a gift to a friend of his who was getting married, and we have that play. So it's the same way he wrote two versions of his life. He has the first play, Migdal Oz, on his Kabbalistic ideas, and the second play. So he has two plays of his life. So he wrote two plays, which is a plays on his life, and two books. So we are going to read the Derech Hashem. It's called The Ways of Hashem. And it sounds simple, but it's amazingly how many deep Kabbalistic ideas are buried into it. And I thought it was a great way of segueing into this concept of Machshava, that you see how Kabbalistic ideas can be explained in simple terms, but they are accurate at the most and deepest levels, that if somebody decides one day to go, you'll see how this is deeper and deeper, it's all consistent and consilient. So we'll start with the Ramchal. Derech Hashem. Okay, Chelek Beit, Binyan Yisrael V'Mot Olam. Adam HaRishon Kodem Chato Haya B'Matzav Elyon Meod. Adam HaRishon, we have to realize something. All of our lives are here coming to rectify, to bring Adam to his tikkun. Adam HaRishon was the first archetype Adam, and this, our lives are coming to rectify, to bring back, or not only to bring back, to bring him to his tikkun. And take a look how he explains. Mimashu Adam Tata. Adam was in a much higher level than when we are today. That's one of the problems the Kabbalists will always have. It's something to reduce. We read the Bible story and we turn it into our own terms. As Adam was created and there was light and was a talking snake. Right? This is in good English called concording. Concording is some people look at scientific development and say, aha, light is energy, Einstein. This is concording. Because it's something that is, in Kabbalistic terms, actually wrong. Methodologically is wrong. Because Adam HaRishon was in a level much higher than us that is impossible for us even to conceive how he was. Rabbi Shapiro used to say, we're much closer to the Nachash than to the Adam. So if you want to put us, try to imagine us into the Nachash. But he can't. That's the first methodological. That's what it explains. And therefore, humanity at that level, it was in a very different spiritual level. If anybody wants to see in the previous years here in Israel, we went through. We all know that the stories of Adam HaRishon, they are stories going on in a different plane, in a different level of consciousness. It's not here. It's not the physical. It was in the physical, the ramification, because always, but he was in a much higher level. That Ramchal also espouses the same idea. Adam and humanity were totally different than we are today. And they were ready for a very high level, which is eternal. And if not for the sin of the original sin, which is Chet Etzadat, that growth would continue. Adam HaRishon was created with a mission, with a test, with a challenge. Had he won the challenge, he would have grown in a different path. In that spiritual level that he was, the world, he will have children, and the children will be spiritual, will be a totally different reality than what we live today. And would have been a humanity and a population in a totally different level. But there was a plan of having humanity being in a different plane. And that was part of the original plan. It's called the master plan, the original plan. And everybody would have been in that situation. Adam HaRishon, as we know, the world is always created with a blueprint. And that blueprint doesn't stay. In Jewish life, you should know that in life, it's always a blueprint, and the blueprint breaks, and you rebuild it again. Adam HaRishon was in a very special situation, and humanity would have looked very differently. And because of his sin, that disappeared, and we're starting again. I always ask my class, meaning how many times you see this in Jewish history? It's throughout, right? You see Luchot Rishonot, this pristine Luchot, they break and you start anew again of something which is not, but is aiming to that. It's like a blueprint that you're trying to emulate. Bayit Rishon. Bayit Rishon was, we had Ashrat HaShchina, gets destroyed. Kedusha Rishona, Kitsha LeShata, VeLo Kitsha LaTid LaVo. The original sanctity and the holiness of the first temple existed, but ceased, doesn't exist anymore. We build a second temple that is with us till today. And this repeats again and again and again. Today in the morning I said, if you look at the Mantzepach are the final letters of the Aleph Beit. There are five letters in the Aleph Beit who have a doubles. They have the beginning, the open letters, and the final Mem, the final Nun, right? And the idea, they represent history and development from beginning to end processes. The beginning of the process is the Mem and the Nun. Mem, the first Mem, is Mayim, is water, is potential. Mem, always when you want to extract potential, you put a Mem before. That's the great potential. But you know what happens to the next thing? Is the noon. You know what the noon is? Chazal say, in the Ashrei, we don't have a noon. Because the letter noon represents foe, represents failure. Nofla toisiv kum. So it's the great potential and the failure. Noon in Hebrew, it's so funny. The word mem, right? The mem, the first mem in the Torah is mine, is water. In Hebrew, even if you look at the old Hebrew, it's called Ksavivri, which is a pictograph. The pictograph was, the mem was like waves, like water. And you know what noon in Hebrew means? Fish. Because there is water, but there's the fish that swim in the water. The water is pristine, is great, but the fish in the water is a failure. It's a fish, and you go that you have bumps on the road. That's how life is all about. The baby, if you look at Jewish thought, right, the fetus in the mother's womb, he learns Kol HaTorah Kula. He learns everything. And what does happen afterwards? He forgets it, and he starts anew. It's always the case. Always there's a pristine idea, the water with all that potential, and then we start swimming, you realize that the first thing is you fail. That's why Torah is called the Machshela. The Torah is called the stumbling stone. It's a stumbling block. Because Ein Adam Omed Aleha, you can never understand Torah, Elim Ken Nichshal Tchila, unless you fail first. It's a world that's built on failure. But that's the idea. So Adam HaRishon is this pristine archetype, which is an image of a pristine human being who is a humanity in the spiritual terms. But that's why it's always a problem. You can never bring Adam to us. We have to bring us to Adam. See, concording means that you take Adam and you explain him in our terms. You're taking Adam into our terms. It's the opposite. We bring ourselves to him to see that he's a spiritual being and we're trying to achieve that. But that Adam HaRishon was supposed to be there, but like everything else in life in Jewish history, that's how the system works. The mem goes to a noon, and when the man, when the fish starts swimming, first thing he fails. It's a world that's built on failure. And it's a great message for us, by the way, if you see how the system works. If you expect to succeed at your first step, you're missing and misreading the world. I'll tell you my own personal life. We traded derivatives. We started with derivatives. Derivatives are financial instruments. And when we started, it was a huge explosion. People using it, and it was amazing. And I knew from my Kabbalistic thoughts that this thing is going to stumble. There is no question about it. Has to. And I remember there was at that time, it was not Forbes. Maybe it was Forbes, but I think it was Fortune magazine. Fortune magazine had a picture of a lake, like some kind of a thing, with crocodiles and many eyes. Like crocodiles waiting to eat you up, and those are derivatives. I said, aha, we are now the stumbling block, because this will blow up, and then you rebuild little by little. Kachave. It blew up, there were so many losses, and then became norm. Now there is a new play called Junk. It's the story of Mike Milken. Mike Milken also, he built what? He built Junk Bonds. Junk Bonds had this huge success, and the takeovers, and then it blew into smithereens, called the FIREA Act, and went to nothing. And then it created, the junk bonds became something called high yield, right? And today it's part of the world. High yield is bigger than the low yield. High grade and high yield trade on the same way. This is how life is structured, right? This is the system. The system is always this. God gives you that picture, and that's untenable. It's a model. And goes. So the Ramchal says, Adam HaRishon is that, is a picture, is a snapshot of the blueprint of how the world should look, and you're going to see what happens. So continues, and he says, V'omnam ha'toldot ha'ele she'ara'u le'alid. Originally, the system was that he was going to have offspring. Nigzeru v'shoaru lefondit barem shadim v'gadu yichadot. They will be in separate levels. The humanity will develop in different ways. But look at the structure of the original structure. Look at what he says. The system was not a socialized system that everybody is equal. All equal under the law. There was not. Was always to be supposed to be heads and subordinates. Higher and lower. Like a tree has a trunk and a branch. They're not competing with each other. They're living in total harmony. Says the Ramchal, the original Adam was going to have Roshim v'Nitpalim, was going supposed to have the heads and the ones, the followers. Shorashim v'Anafim was supposed to have a trunk and roots, and there were supposed to be branches. One of the great beauties, and we're going to see, that the system that God created is a system of equality, which is also non-equality. Equality doesn't mean that all of us are the same. All of us have the same importance. We are all required for the system, but we're not supposed to be doing the same thing. In other words, these ideas, and the Kabbalists will say the males and females should be exactly the same. If they should have been exactly the same, they should have been androgynous. You could have had. I always say in my course at Penn, I'm giving a course called It's Family and Gender in the Talmud. So we go into the genders, into the six genders. The Talmud recognizes the six genders. But the idea is that there is a distinction of genders. I'm not telling who's better, who's worse. All of them are necessary. You can't have one without the other. But they are different. So there is an equality within differences. That's what he says. Originally, there were Roshim v'Nitpalim, Shorashim v'Anafim. They were always supposed to be in the system. The trunk, the roots, and the branches. Nimshachim ze aseh beseder b'yuchad kirlainot. Would have been the world, the pristine world of Adam. Although it was all spiritual, the system would have been the same. That would be like a orchard. You had trees, and you had branches, and you had roots. And would have been the exact number supposed to be. But as always, that pristine Adam, with Chet Adam HaRishon, he lost and he became much lower. He became from that great archetype spiritual. The Chet Adam HaRishon brought the world into a lack of clarity. And instead of having a skin of light, Kotnot Or with an Aleph, he became Kotnot Or with an Ayin. The skin became a skin of leather. He wrote, the world became a world physical, a world which is superficial, a world of the layer of superficiality. And that brought the world to a very low level. The world comes to a very pristine state, for a very low state. They would not in the same level as they were before. And the world became much lower. Adam HaRishon became much lower. This is the first blow up. There is a pristine story, and within a couple of hours, that story is a snapshot that disappears and it comes back. The repetition of how life is all with the case. And the humanity becomes the much lower level. However, and this is the amazing part, which is a true from our life. When there is this picture that blows up and now becomes something else much lower, the kernel, the idea, the potential is there. So that's why you have a blueprint. God gives you always a pristine blueprint that can never withstand. Now, if I may ask you, why? Why is this system such? Why did God create a system that you have something amazingly that goes on and then blows up? You have to build again and says that I'm Ramchal. But that idea is in potential inside. You saw the picture. You have the picture. Why doesn't God create? So they just have, because here, the 20 people. And the answer is almost like what's called the rhetoric answer. It's because God wants us to be part of in creations. When God told man, let us make man, the Sfatemet asks, who was God talking to? Let us make man. Says the Sfatemet, God was talking to us. Let me and you build you. I give you the picture and the potential, and we develop the potential. In essence, what it is, the relationship between humans and God is the relationship between females and males. God is the male who gives the potential, and we are the females who are developing the potential and turning into reality. So the picture is the potential, and it's blown up. He did the Chet Adam HaRishon, but that picture is within us. And you see that this is a fundamental difference between Christianity as a theological rewrite of the Bible and the rabbinic rewrite of the Bible. Because they will say that the world failing means that is done and you need grace and redemption. We don't believe that. We believe that the chet of Adam HaRishon was not a fluke in nature. People say, ah, if Adam HaRishon would have just withstand for 2 more minutes and do something, why did he have to do it? Like, what? Is this such a thing? But you don't realize. The Gemara says, had he done this, we would have been nothing. Because we would have been given our existence in a silver platter. We want to have that picture and build it ourselves. We don't want the Malach to teach us Torah. We want him to teach us Torah to give us the potential for us to do it on our own. And that is the key, that we have to do it in our own. That's the world of Tikkun. You should know, by the way, that this is so fundamental in mystical thinking. That, as I mentioned in the previous class, that made a huge impact on the development of modern science. Modern science, we all know that we have seen, and there is a lot of studies done on that, on the impact of the translation of Kabbalah into Latin, into the great thinkers, into John Locke, Newton, and it's called Kabbalah de Nudat. It's called the undressed Kabbalah. It was a work translated into Latin and made a big impact into the thinkers of that time, because it broke the Christian idea that the world is perfect and the humans are here to break it and to say just the opposite. The world is not perfect. It's not supposed to be perfect. Perfection is supposed to be brought by us. So medicine is not rebringing the world back to a pristine state, but the world is not in a pristine state. Our job is to make it pristine. God creates that perfect image. He destroys it to allow us to rebuild it. And that perfect world is an image unto us, is the potential to us. So that's what it explains. There is a shoresh. In Chazal, this is called the reshimu. The reshimu is the imprint. That reality exists today in an imprint in our souls as the model, as the goal, as the blueprint of what we have to be. ולא נדחי אדם הראשון לגמרי שלא יוכל לשוב אל המדרגה אליה. עוד דבר ראשון, הזה, pushed away. He was never pushed away. He was pushed down with the ability to climb up. אבל נמצא בפועל במדרגה שפלה, in reality, in how he is, in the perceived world, he's in a very low level. ובבחינה כוחניות, but in potential, in reality, he's low, but in potential, Ela Madriga, Elena, he has the potential to go back to the original Adam. So that original Adam goes from a reality into potential, and Adam has that potential, that goal, that striving. That's why we say humans, if you go and you look at what humans have achieved, this amazing human consciousness, that we change the world, we keep changing the world, is because we have that imprint of that pristine state in our consciousness. והנה נתן, but take a look, and now this is the חידוש של רמחל, נתן לו ברוך הוא לפני התולדות הם של באותה הזמן, את הבחירה, and God gave people at that time, which is called, this is the stem cells of humanity. We believe that the stem cells, the trunks of the souls, were the people who with the stem, they could have molded themselves, and they had the choice to do so, שהתחזק והשתדלו לעלות במדרגה שפלה ולשים מצב במדרגה העליונה. The world had the ability to climb back to become Adam again. So they were lowered, given the potential, and they were going to see that humanity had stem cells. They had stem humanity who could reconstruct themselves easily. והניח זמן לדבר. The חידוש של רמח"ל is, there was a time that this could be done, where you could take that potential of Adam and realize that and go back and to reactivate that level of Adam that was latent within himself. כמו ששיר רחמה עליונה יתיון נאוד לשתות הזה. God gave a specific time. והדרך מה שמנחת לנו To allow us to together to create a community. At that time, you could create a community of people who could climb back to Olam Adam. One thing that Ramchal is also saying, in life, every single thing that requires work, there is a specific time. It's not forever. I always say like this: people have time to do things. If you have too much time, you'll never get anything done. That's the reality of it. Because says the Ramchal, this is the Ramchal, any goal that you have needs to be bound by time. Chazal said, the Gemara of Zohar, see, we have a discussion, is death good or bad? The Gemara said, because today, you know that all these disruptors in technology are trying to disrupt death. We all know that Peter Thiel and all these guys think that they want to live forever. And they're investing a lot of money to invest forever. And the question is, does it make sense to live forever? The Gemara of Avodah Zarah says one of the greatest brochas of Adam is that because of him we have death. Because now you have a limited time to achieve what you have to do. Because if you have unlimited time to do, it means you'll never get anything done. That's what Chazal is saying. So therefore, says the Ramchal, and that's why the word in Hebrew, zman, comes from the notion of preparation, that's me, right? Zman is preparation, is the Adam. Because if you don't have the time is a process, is a goal, and if you don't have a limit of time, you never prepare yourself. So, says the Ramchal, there was a time when humans can achieve back to the Madrig of Adam. And therefore, that idea of going back to Adam is divided also in two stages. One of them is called the root stage, and the other one is called the leaf stage. One of them is to draw the roots, and the other one is to develop into branches. The first stage of Adam was the Adam, by the way, if you look at the cells, there's a good book that I mentioned here so many times, Jeffrey West, called Scale, that the whole universe is scaling itself. You realize there's one system that's scaling itself in many ways. And one of the scales are that if you look in the cell development, right, you have something called the stem cells, and then the stem cells create cells which develop. In the system of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's the same thing. There is the initial stage, it's called the stem cells. It's called the stage of the roots, of developing the stem cells. And then, once the cell gets developed, the cell continues in its development. They are the two stages. First the roots and then the leaves. First stage was to create the stem cells. Adam had to create, in the beginning of creation, was to create the trunks, or to create the stem cells of the new humanity. Adam Arishon was a pristine human, became low. Now in potential, he has to go back. To go back, he has to create the stem cells to be able to do that. And that's the first stage. Because then, once you mold yourself into this proto-Adam, you could develop afterwards into Adam. So there are two stages. Always the proto, which is the initial, and then the development. This is also one of the soidos of the Ramchal. That every process of development, first there's a stem cell, there's a core, and then it develops. I think that in the Bavli, my dissertation was this, was that the Bavli is two works composed. One of them is called the Proto-Talmud, the original trunk Talmud, and then the development of the Talmud. And when the Talmud was finally written, it was put the two works together. But there are two stages you see in the Gemara. You see, anybody who pays attention, does any literary work on the Bavli, will realize that the Bavli has the same system. The trunk system, which is the stem cells, which creates the trunk, and then the branches, which is tradition and innovation. Always this system. So says the Ramchal, the initial stage of Adam to climb back to his original was to create the stem cells, to create the proto-Adam. When was that? He created a time frame. There was a window of time where Adam could climb back to create the proto-Adam. There was a window. And then once he becomes a proto-Adam, he could develop into reaching what Adam was. Ariel Mishay Adam, Bematzav Atov, Bematzav Atov, Adam Matzav Bekulkal. He could change from being the Adam, which is not perfect, to the perfect one. Vechen Yasig, Sheotzit Odov Karuimelo. Then he could go ahead and create children like him. Kulam Bebchinato, Pirush, Beotom, Adagav, Matzav Shekvar Yisig, Vashosho. He could, once he gets to become a stem cell, the proto-Adam, he could create the people who could reach perfection. Ve'haya hazman, now this is the key line. When was that time? Ve'haya hazman hazeh. That time of the creation of the proto-Adam, in the image of the Adam that was destroyed, was from Adam Arishon, Azman HaPaloga. From this until the time of the Paloga. Paloga is the Tower of Babel. And you realize why. The Tower of Babel, that tower is called the Migdal Bavel. The time is called the Dor HaPaloga. This is the generation of the split. Because the way to create spirituality, you need unity. The world was united up to the tower. What was the tower? The tower in Kabbalistic terms were physical people trying to reach spirituality and control the world of spiritual. But they wanted to control the world of spiritual is the world. That's why it's a tower, right? It's something trying to reach the heavens, the heights. But they were trying to control the heaven. And the reaching out of the heaven of the spiritual is just the opposite. Not for us to control them, but them to control us. So that was the timing of the reach out. And because they went and they failed, because humanity tried and they reached heaven, but they reached to war, to wage war against heaven, to use heaven for their own usage. That's called Avodah Zarah. Idolatry, pagan work. Michel Moss already writes, is the theory of the gift. All of idolatry was like an exchange. You gave them something for them to give you. You're going to use them. Instead of users, you're supposed to reach there to become subservients, not to become the masters, but become the servants. So at that moment is the moment that Adam is blocked. You can't reach here. The end of the stem cells of Adam is called Dor HaPaloga, because then the world splits into languages. Once you split into languages, there's no unity. You can't climb anymore. And that's why Chazal say, who is the person? Noah survived the flood. Who was the person that survived the tower? That person is called Avraham Avinu. This is the beginning of Avraham. Avraham is the one that survives the tower. How old was Avraham when he survived the tower? Avraham was Chazal. Rashi in this week's parsha already says. Rashi is very consistent in Chazal. He was 48 years old. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, happy is the person who did not follow the advice of the Rishoyim. Is Avraham Avinu who did not follow the builders of the tower. He did not follow them. And this is what Adam Arishon is all about. And Avraham Avinu is the one who is able to create that Adam who can reach the highs. V'hine kol oto hazman lo chod lo tzadikim dorshim ha'emet l'rabim. During that time, there were tzadikim there, kigon Chanoch, Metushelach, Shem Ve'ever, Mazirim, Otam Shitkun Tatzmam, and they were there and preaching people to become better. V'kivin shemasalatam shel abriyot, zman apologos, shafat, this was the end of the test. The Zman Apologa. So then God looked at all the people. And this, what you were there, sets you up. That's why the 70 nations are set at the time of the Migdal. That's why up to the tower, up to the story of the tower, the Kabbalists will say, Keviat Emtor, you cannot take it in physical sense. Don't read it, there was a tower and you're going to look for what are the remnants of a tower. This is all spiritual ideas. Because this is the beginning of humanity. When the world splits, because what you were then, the stem cells, you continue. And the Ramchal will explain, and I'm just going, because we're going to finish in like in 3 minutes, the person who became the ultimate potential of Adam to connect back to spirituality is Avraham Avinu. He's the person who did it, and we'll see why. But that's why he becomes the father of all humanity. I always say, if you want to prove the Torah is Min HaShamayim, the Torah writes one person is Av Hamon Goyim, the father of many nations. Who is that? Is Avram. There is no one in this planet, in the history of Earth, that's already a test. Anybody who knows the test of the Abrahamic religions, who considers there are people, who is the person who most humans in this planet relate to him, that they are descendants of him, followers of him. It's not Jesus, it's not Muhammad, it's Moses, it's only one person called Abraham. Avram is the only person that Christians, Muslims, Jews consciously say that he's our father, which is the monotheistic, the what you call the religions, the monotheistic religions. Two and a half billion people are followers directly from him. Now, the interesting part of it is, anybody who did any mystical from the Orient, from the Asian mysticals, meaning following the theories of the Buddha and the theories of the Hindu traditions, they're very similar to ours. And in Chazal, they don't say that they are part of Avram, that not consciously, but in Chazal, our tradition is that the children of Hagar, right? Hagar, she comes and she becomes Keturah, right? She goes ahead, she also has two lives. She marries Avram in our Parsha, and she has Ishmael, and she's sent away. Now, this Parsha starting, what happens? Avram remarries somebody called Keturah. In Chazal, Keturah is Hagar. And she had children. And in the end of this Parsha, say, Vayishlachem kedma el eretz kedem. It says, it sent them to the east. That's what it says in the Pasuk. Pirkei d'Rabbi Elazar is so interesting because Pirkei d'Rabbi Elazar traces the story of Islam, and we're going to actually learn it, some pieces of Pirkei d'Rabbi Elazar, how he understands Islam, even though it's way before Islam, so you have to deal with it, and we deal when we get there. But interestingly enough, he says, Vayishlachem kedem el eretz kedem, says in the Midrash, in Pirkei d'Rabbi Elazar, kol ma shatem yecholim leazriach. He told them, as far east as you can go, tazrichu. Go to the ultimate east. Says the Radal, they went to a Medina Mukefes Choma. They went to a country which was surrounded by a wall. And he writes, Ve'im Medinat China Adayom. And this is the country of China till today. So our tradition is the Bnei Keturah. And that's why anybody who said Ari Kaplan says that, because if you follow any of these Eastern mystical traditions, if anybody went to find it. And it's interesting, I did actually, at Columbia, I did a paper I studied Tibetan Buddhism. And I wrote a paper comparing the Ramchal to the traditions of the Buddha. Right? To samsara, and anybody who knows this stuff. And the professor loved it. I said, it's so interesting because these people never saw each other. They never heard of each other. But they are talking the same language. It is unbelievable, just by coincidence. So he could say two things, either because the truth is there, and all these thinkers got to the truth, however they got. But according to us, according to the Jewish tradition, is a causality, right? Because we believe, at least Pirkei d'Rabbi Elazar writes, and that's how the Radal, which is Talmid Agro from the same school, says that those Eastern traditions were sent by Avram to the East. So it comes out that this idea of the stem cell of humans who have the ability in themselves to become spiritual and to close the gap between physical and spirituality starts from Avram, because he's the stem cell, because he is the one who survived the Dor HaPalaga. And that's why we'll see that the Gro will write. And that's something so interesting for the mystical thinkers, that the 70 nations of the world are 70, but the number, as you know, is always 72, right? The Sanhedrin was 70, but there are two people ahead of the Sanhedrin. God's name has 72 names, and two of them are the heads of the name. It's called Anivahu. Anivahu that we say on Noshana are the two of the 70. There's always two heads. Like I told you, the system is always a trunk and the branches. 70 branches, two trunks. The 70 branches of nations of the world has two trunks. You know the two trunks are? Esav and Ishmael. Even though the Chinese, what do they know about Ishmael and Esav? Because our tradition is that those are branches of the same ideas, because the only human who brought it, and that's why we have such an oddity, and every scholar will say, that is amazing how many people consciously see themselves as the followers and the bearers of the tradition of Avraham. Not Yitzchak, not Yaakov, not Muhammad, nobody, only Avraham. And the reason he says Ramchal, because he is the end of the building of the stem cells of humanity as they come to reach the heights of Adam HaRishon, as you heard before the head. Have a Shavua Tov, we'll see you in 2 weeks, Baruch Hashem.